This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
I know you're out there somewhere.
Well, good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. This morning, it's lawns and gardens and fleas and tomatoes and whatever you'd like to talk about. The guy with the plan, Mitchell Moat, is with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Mitchell, good morning to you.
Hello, Bart. Good morning to you and everyone that may be listening this morning.
Good to have you with us on this beautiful day.
It is. It's truly a blessing to wake up and walk outside and feel temperatures like we felt the last couple of mornings.
I tell you, it's been fantastic. Evening hours are great, too.
Oh, yeah. You talk about port sitting weather, you know, visiting weather. If folks haven't experienced going out in the evenings like this and visiting with a neighbor or just sitting on the porch watching the world go by, they ought to maybe take a little time to try that.
Yeah, and I'm noticing the lightning bugs are in now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They're out doing their whatever lightning bugs do.
<That's right. laughs> Yeah, they're out there.
Yeah.
Now, as you look back over the past week, is there any question or so that seems to be popping up a lot at the AgriPark there?
Oh, I don't know that any one thing in particular, Bart. As is normally the case, when we get into this time of the year, home vegetable gardens, you know, tomatoes are growing now. You're having usually continued warm weather and so on, good growing conditions for those. So that's when you see a few problems pop up on those. Some of the leaf spot diseases or other foliar diseases get on those, and folks get concerned about them. Have seen a couple of cases of a blossom end rot on tomatoes, and that's always disheartening. And that's the condition where you have a seemingly good, firm, well-developed tomato, and then you reach the picket, boy, the end of it's rotten. The end furthest away from the stem or the blossom end is rotten, and that is that's an annual occurrence. Folks are apt to see it most every year, depending on how they manage things, and it is caused by a deficiency of calcium in the plant itself. And one thing I would encourage folks to do, especially during these periods when we don't have very much rainfall, you want to keep the moisture fairly constant around those tomatoes, because if the soil dries out too much, then they cannot take the calcium that may be in the soil out of the soil and put it in the tomato where they can use it, and thus that leads to a deficiency in the plant. You know, just because you have blossom end rot is not necessarily an indication that there is a calcium deficiency in the ground, but it is a calcium deficiency in the plant. And having consistent water in the soil, consistent moisture, is a way to help avoid that. So I would encourage folks to do that. And, you know, you get blossom end rot in melons and squashes and so on, too. Mm-hmm. So consistent moisture is a real plus. And if you go to the trouble, you know, to put it out and to keep it weed-free and or relatively weed-free and so on, then it's you ought to put a little water around them, too.
Absolutely. Now, which is another reason, I mean, you were talking about the calcium problem. You need to have your soil tested.
Yeah, that's the only way you'll know for sure if you have actually a deficiency of calcium in the ground. And very often there's, you know, our soils tend to be a little more acid than they do basic anyway, so it's not uncommon to see a soil test report come back with a recommendation to add some lime to it. And of course, lime has a lot of calcium in it, so that would be a source of calcium to it. But if a person is having seeing some plants or some of their fruit on the tomato show up with the blossom end rot condition, you can't fix that tomato. I mean, it'll never look any better than it looks at the time you discover it. It'll just continue to decline. But what you can do, though, is kind of a Band-Aid for the problem, is to use a calcium spray. A calcium solution can be mixed up and applied to the foliage, and that'll help get some calcium in the plant and maybe keep future fruit from developing that, and you can buy it at garden centers. It will have something in the name of, like, you know, blossom rot stop or stop rot or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just a calcium solution.
Okay. Now, we're now in June. This is the 7th of June.
Yes, it is.
Time does fly.
6 months are gone, man.
Boy, as you're outside thinking about, I want to add this to my garden, or I want to do this around the house, what are some good things to do right now? Or is this just a time to sort of sit back and water what you have and mow your grass?
Well, certainly you want to do mow when it's needed. In the warm weather, boy, I will say this: if folks are applying moisture to their lawns, if they're irrigating, you know, the temperatures haven't been that hard on the cool season grasses up to this point. So if they're getting adequate moisture, your tall fescue and other cool season grasses are growing well, and the Bermuda grasses, obviously, they prefer the warmer weather. Their growth may not have been as vigorous as it could have been some years, because we have had some fluctuation, you know, kind of up and down, you know, cool and warm weather interspersed together. But it's growing well, assuming it's getting enough moisture on it. You know, you don't need to really think about trying to fertilize any cool season turf grass now. I wouldn't anticipate needing to fertilize that again until probably no earlier than the 1st of September. But on the warm season stuff, the Bermuda grass is always your grass. And those are the two primary ones you'll see here. They're fertilized throughout the growing season. So basically, if you want to follow what's referred to as sort of a high maintenance schedule, where you're looking for the high end quality in the turf grass, you kind of figure an every 6 week schedule, where once the grass begins to green up in the spring, you make your first application, and roughly every 6 weeks after that, mm-hmm. you follow it with another application of nitrogen, somewhere in the neighborhood of a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 feet, and continue that up to around the 1st of September. But you don't have adequate moisture, even the Bermuda grass is not going to grow as rapidly. But, you can certainly put out annual flowers still. You know, you can always add color into beds, into plantings, into pots and whatnot. The petunias and the other warm season annuals are certainly well suited for this kind of temperature environment. Lots of selections still available, or apparently they are, at least as you drive by and just glance at those things at the nursery centers, the garden centers, and so on. There's still a lot of selection of plants out there. If you're going to look at mulching, if you need to freshen up mulch, improve the mulch to add a little more to increase or darken the color up a little bit, you can do that most any time of the year. Obviously, there's always the need for weeding to keep things clean out of the beds and so on. And depending on how you've got it laid out, that can be a fairly simple task, or it can be just plain old hard work. If you don't have room to work around plants and so on, if it's a fairly crowded bed, then you're going to probably be looking at hand pulling things. But if you do have more space, you know, between plants, you can use some mechanical cultivation in there. You can also take advantage of some herbicides that can be applied to cut down on weed competition. I would encourage you, though, if you want to minimize the amount of weeding that has to be done, once you have a bed clean, do think about using one of the pre-emergent materials to help minimize the future germination of annual weeds, both broadleafs and grasses in there, because if they don't come up, you don't have to worry about pulling them or digging them up. So that's always a plus, and there are a lot of options out there.
Very good. So if you have any of those problems, or if you're uncertain about any of these things, they can help you right there at the Co-op Center, the Ag Center, the Rutherford County Ag Center, and that's right there on John Rice Boulevard, next to Paws, just down from Sam's.
Yeah, we're not the Co-op, but
that's right.
Yeah, the Co-op's in the business of selling things. We don't sell things, but yes.
And you're also the location where the farmers market is on Fridays and Tuesdays.
The Rutherford County Farmers Market, yes, mm-hmm. sir, that's correct. Tomorrow morning they'll be open mm-hmm. at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And they'll be there until noon. And
right.
A lot of folks have figured out where it is, so they're coming and shopping and
great place,
and you know, taking advantage of the food there. Did speak with a gentleman earlier in the week, and From all accounts, it seems like maybe that the voles have kind of worked on his potato crop. He's getting about ready to try to dig some potatoes and found out that maybe the voles had damaged them to a mm-hmm. significant amount. And a vole is kind of a mouse-like critter that is... They have runs and you know, burrows in the soil and whatnot, and they feed on plant material, both above ground parts of plants as well as below ground parts of plants. And you know, he's thinking, well, what's the easiest thing to do to deal with these voles? And probably the easiest thing he can do to deal with the voles is instead of trying to replace those potatoes, you know, go to the farmer's market and buy them. I guess probably the easiest thing a fella could do. So if, you know, if some of your own vegetable production efforts have been not as successful as you desired, the market is another option.
Okay. 7 until noon.
7
tomorrow.
Until noon, Tuesdays and Fridays.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Good morning. I just wanted to ask him, what can we do to spray, what spray should we use to take care of white flies on tomatoes?
Okay. White flies on tomatoes. There are a class of insecticides that are known as pyrethroid insecticides have good efficacy against white flies. Now, I think the real key there is getting good coverage, regardless of what you use. You need to get good coverage. And, you know, tomatoes, they get size to them. The foliage is real thick. You need to get the interior of the plant, not just the outside of the plant, and do a good job spraying there. Okay, with that being said, an ingredient that you would look for is one called bifenthrin, and it's spelled B. I-F-E-N-T-H-R-I-N, a very common insecticide ingredient. You know, for example, if you're going to the garden center, you're walking along and you see, you come to the Ortho line, for example, Ortho Bug Be Gone Max for vegetables. Well, you look on the label, bifenthrin is the ingredient, or you'll find you know, Spectracide or Bayer and lots of others, they'll have that ingredient as the active ingredient. So it doesn't matter what brand it is, you just want to, bifenthrin will certainly have activity against those flies. And just mix it up according to the label directions. Okay. It will tell you, because it will vary depending on what the strength of the active ingredient is, whether it's a, you know, a 0.2% strength or a 0.15% active strength. And so based on that, that'll determine, is it a tablespoon per gallon of water? Is it, you know, is it an ounce per gallon of water? And then also the label will direct you as to how often it can be applied, and also what the harvest interval is, how long, if any, you need to wait from the time you apply it until you harvest the crop. But yes, that will work for you. The bifenthrin type products will.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate it. My daughter bought some tomatoes at the farmer's market this past weekend, and when we got them home, cut them open, they look beautiful on the outside, but the inside is just hard white core.
Yeah, that was this weekend, so she bought them up on the square then, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, okay, shoot, that's disappointing to cut one open and not be a good red one like you thought it was.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. 893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. We have another person online, and we'll be going to them in just a moment. Right now, I want to talk to the organic gardeners. If you're an organic gardener, listen, finally, there's a fast-working and effective all-organic insect control available from Bonide Products. Bonide's Captain Jack Dead Bug Brew. That's the answer for all of your garden insect problems. Captain Jack's works two ways. It works on contact or through feeding. This will ensure that your insect problems are over. Captain Jack's controls all types of insects, including caterpillars, beetles, spider mites, and borers. Use it on vegetables, gardens, berries, trees, shrubs, and fruit. Captain Jack's all-organic insect control is available in easy-to-use dust, liquid concentrate, ready-to-use, and ready-to-spray containers with built-in applicators. Where do you get Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew? Well, they have it over at the Co-op Farm and Home Center. on Middle Tennessee Boulevard just off South Church. The Co-op. They also have it at Martin's Home and Garden, Martin's Home and Garden on Broad, across from Demas Restaurant, Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew. Good morning. You're on WGNS.
Hello.
Hey, good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
Doing fine, thank you.
All right, I was going to ask Mitchell if he knowed of anything. It was like a blight on tomatoes this year. I've got some that all the foliage is just curled up like it got hit by a frost.
Yes, sir. Is it turned color on you?
No, it's still sort of a light green, but they ain't folding out. They're all crumpled up.
Yeah. Now, that could be, I mean, there's a few things that could be, and I have seen a few cases of it. But let me ask you another question. Now, the leaves are just kind of wanting to fold in, but they're not really twisting or curling up or anything. Is that right?
They're not developing.
Okay. All right. Have seen some cases of one of the virus diseases, probably potato virus. It can affect, well, potatoes and tomatoes are kind of kin anyway, so it can get on them as well, and it'll cause unusual growth or the leaves and so on will not open up. But now, normally on a virus, though, you're going to start to see some discoloration. It's like streaks of yellow in the green in the leaves and so on. You'll see that happening. Another thing that's real common to cause them to want to fold up, it's kind of like maybe they're wilting a little bit, but they're not really drooping down. They're just kind of folding together. Is that right?
No, they're just developing hard.
Okay.
Fold it in.
All right. Also, the spider mites that feed on the backsides of the leaves that suck the moisture out of them, they'll cause them to fold like that. And another possibility is one that I've seen probably half a dozen cases of. Matter of fact, I'm guilty of it myself at home. I got just a I've used a weed killer too close to my garden, and I got just a little bit of drift on some of the tomato plants, and the new leaves that grew out initially from that were misshapen, wanted to fold in kind of narrow like and not real wide, but it was just a very light dose of it, and they have grown out of it. I asked folks, well, have you used anything around the lawn or the garden? Oh, I hadn't done anything like that. Well, in warm weather and dry conditions and so on, where you can have this evaporation before it gets set pretty good, you can have some drift from other areas and get on there. I mean, that's a possibility, but I'd sure check it close for if you're not seeing any yellow streaks in the stem or in the leaves themselves along with the green, and it's not wanting to kind of like wrinkle up, then it's probably not a virus. Those tend to go together. You have the wrinkling and the misshapen leaves and the yellow streaks in it. It's probably not a virus. I'd sure look at it for the little tiny ends. And I can't see mites without magnification.
They're small.
Oh, yeah. It takes me about a 40-power magnifier to see the thing. Now, some people claim they can see them. I can't see them because they're just so small. But I'd sure look for that. But if it were a fungal disease, then you're going to see some blotches on the leaves. And I've seen some early blight, but now that always starts down at the bottom of the plant on the lower leaves and moves up. And have seen another foliar disease. This occurs up higher in the plant, but in that one is one that's carried by little insects, aphids and whatnot, as they feed on in one plant and it was infected, and they'll go move to another one. But now it's got blotches and so on the foliage, not just the narrow leaf growth like you're talking about.
Right. It actually started back when that last freeze we had.
Yes, sir.
And it knocked them back, and they never did come out of it. And I tried transplanting, putting some more out to replace the ones that died, and they done the same thing.
I just wonder How are you feeding them?
How am I feeding them?
Yes, sir.
Well, what I do, I'll fertilize them when I put the transplant down. I'll put about 2 tablespoons of fertilizer, about 3 inches below the plant.
Yeah, yeah.
And then water them, and then I'll use a, to get rid of the calcium problem, I use a Rolaids.
Okay. Do they have any, do you see any kind of a little purple color in the leaves at all?
Actually, there's not many leaves on them. It's just basically stem.
I'm a darn, okay.
It's a like a deformity.
Yeah, boy, that, you know, deformity like that, it sure makes you think either you got some herbicide damage to it or you got a virus in there.
Yeah, I don't use no herbicides at all.
Yeah, I just... I kind of lean more towards the possibility of a virus. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, just going from the description, and they're certainly out there.
Yeah.
They can be insect carried. Do you use tobacco?
No.
Okay, because they're tobacco virus, and if somebody smokes or whatnot and then handles it, they'll very often transfer the virus to
right
the tomato plants. Yeah.
I do
yeah.
have a few potatoes around there, but not they're not close. They're on the other side of the garden.
And, well, yeah. You know, potato viruses and so on, they can be spread a long distance simply through the bugs,
yeah.
You know, that can yeah. carry it and so on. But, I mean, if your potatoes aren't showing any symptoms, I wouldn't think
no.
that'd be a potato virus either.
No, they're actually just starting to dry up the stems and everything. And
yeah,
getting ready to dig.
Yep. I don't know. It's a
it's a weird one. I ain't seen it before.
But, I see that every once in a while in I think it must be virus related. I think it must be a virus, but it's kind of like it's not a full-blown case of it, and they just kind of linger and just hang around and just don't grow very well, and they'll stay there all season long and not ever mount to much.
Yeah.
That's been my experience.
Yeah,
like
it
that.
Ain't putting much fruit on.
Uh-uh.
I got one plant out of about 12 that's putting fruit on.
Well, the good thing is it's not too late if you want to try some more.
I think I'll probably just relocate in the garden instead of being in that area.
I would, and I tell you something else too, it wouldn't hurt maybe to try if you're not doing a soil test, you might be a little short on magnesium. And so you could add some Epsom salts to some water and add that to them, and you might
I've
see a little
that.
Benefit.
I'll spread that on top of the ground.
Okay. That'll help get some magnesium in.
Right.
And now magnesium will influence magnesium and phosphorus and potash are pretty important as far as that but also the stem development, that tissue.
Right.
So you won't hurt anything by adding some of that to it.
That magnesium will increase the root growth.
It sure helps, yes, sir.
Yep. All right, then. Well, I appreciate it.
Well, I wish I could have told you exactly, but I'm afraid I can't.
Yeah, it's just something different. I'll probably just give up this year. Might try a few more separate.
I think that's probably the best bet.
Do a bucket or something on them.
There you go.
Good
all
luck.
Right, then.
Good luck to you, sir.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it.
893-1450 is our number. We have a full lineup of folks with questions. Hold on. We'll be back and take your call in just a moment. Right now, let's hear from some folks who are making our broadcast possible, and we'll also check on the traffic and weather.
Buy a new Ford Escape at Ford of Murfreesboro and get up to $3,500 off MSRP or 0% financing for up to 60 months. The Ford Escape won't have you shying away from the gas station. The SUV gets up to 33 miles per gallon on the highway. Need more miles per gallon? Try the Ford Focus Electric and you'll never need a drop of gas or an oil change again. See the Ford Focus Electric and the Escape at Ford of Murfreesboro at the intersection of Broad and Northfield or online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
Hello, I'm Greg Tidwell from Bell Jewelers. We carry the full line of Tag Heuer watches, all at 15% off every day. Our in-house watch technicians will replace the batteries and pressure test all Tag watches for half the price of other stores in our area. Bring it into Bell Jewelers.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street in Murfreesboro, across from Toots.
Play it again, sports!
Your baseball and softball headquarters.
Whether it's bats, gloves, pants, or training aids, we've got a great selection to get you on the diamond this summer. Name brands like Easton, Louisville Slugger, and Worth, but at Played Against Sports Prices, we're on Thompson Lane.
Good morning once again. We have traffic easing a bit on I-24 at 96, I-24 at 231. Still dealing with lots of heavy congestion around I-24, around exit 111 there in Coffee County, the McMinnville Highway exit there. That's, of course, the main gate to the Bonnaroo Festival, so anticipate some major slowdown through that area for a little while longer this morning. Save now, save big, 50% off auto glass. Trust America's auto glass specialist, Glassmasters, for fast, friendly, and professional service at their location or yours. Call 248-5570. I'm Randy Bryant with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
We'll have plenty of sunshine for the forecast area, 83 degrees for your high, with a calm wind becoming northeast, around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, clear skies, low of 58. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, 66.
I'm Steve Smith at First National Bank, Murfreesboro. Our people are different from others. We give the personal service. We're here to answer the telephone. We're just personal hometown banking at First National Bank, Murfreesboro, member FDIC.
There is an underground civilization underneath of the North American continent.
It's Coast to Coast AM, overnight, every night on WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Mitchell Moats with us this morning from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. If you have a question, our number is 893-1450. 893-1450. All the lines are full. And let's take another call. You're on WGNS with Mitchell. How are you today? Hello there. Hi, good morning.
Hey, a buddy of mine's got about 8 or 10 bracken pears, Mitchell, and they look good. They're all green and full, but there's limbs, just separate limbs. It looks like they're dying in them. Leaves have turned brown.
Yeah.
The rest of the tree looks good.
Looks like they're dying. It starts kind of like the end of the branches. The leaves will turn brown, dead looking, maybe even black on the ends, and kind of curl over. It runs back anywhere
certain
from
limbs. Yeah,
yeah.
Certain limbs. The rest of them look great.
Well, it sure sounds like fire blight. Most of the ornamental pears, like Bradford pear, as well as the fruiting pears and apple trees and crab apples and so on, they're all susceptible to that. It's a bacterial disease that hits those trees, and have seen a fair amount of it this spring. It's been kind of odd, though, because normally, in most years, when you have a wetter spring, you'll have those strikes are called strikes when they appear like that, mm-hmm. but they'll infect the limb, and then the limb will die back, you know, a considerable distance. This year we've kind of seen them where they're not infecting the entire limb. There might be like a spur off a limb. And the idea was that, well, since the moisture was a little bit lower, there was not enough inoculum there being produced to infect. They just kind of got a low dose infection, but that's sure what it sounds like. And unfortunately, you know, there's at this point there's not any kind of a treatment for it other than pruning out the infected parts. And if a person's going to do that, they'll want to take a good set of sharp pruners and cut below the dead area back into clean wood. And this is kind of a slow process, but they ought to disinfect their pruners between cuts, because this is bacteria and it can be spread by the pruning tool if you cut into some diseased wood. And you know, you can use Lysol in water or a mild bleach in water solution, although the bleach would tend to be more corrosive on the metal. And what then they could and destroy that tissue, you know, the dead clippings you cut out, because they do serve as a source. I mean, that bacteria can be held in there. And next spring, though, if they want to do something about that to help minimize that, when the trees begin to bloom, they can be treated with streptomycin. It's an antibiotic, and you, yeah, it's like going to the drugstore, but you can go to the garden center and buy streptomycin for to mix the spray on trees, and it'll have to be sprayed then, because if it's not done during that bloom time, it's not going to be effective, because apparently the majority of the infection occurs through the bloom itself.
Do you spray it on the tree or on the ground?
Yeah, you're spraying the tree.
The tree itself.
Yeah, now how realistic is that for a great big tree? Well, it's tough to do, you know, for a homeowner to do that. So if it's a great big tree, it may not be possible.
Well, these are probably 3.5 inches in diameter. He planted them about 2.5-3 years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, they could still be of a size now that he could conceivably do that. But I mean, that certainly sounds like what it is. That's what you described, just pretty classic symptoms, and the way that they're found just at random locations around the tree. So, you know, if he wants to try to work on those for next spring, that's, you know, I'd sure get lined up and be ready to make that application.
Spray that as soon as they start blooming?
Yeah, just when the blooms, even before they're open, good. You know, if you can just see a little white bloom here and there, boom, that's when you start it. And, well, I can't remember what the label says, but it seems like you may have to do it a couple of times or so during or while the blooms are still open. But you'll want to follow that schedule, whatever it is.
That's called streptomycin?
Streptomycin, yep.
All right, thanks.
Yes, sir, you're
welcome. Good luck to you. Good morning, you're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi. I have two words, and I have a large infestation of them, Japanese beetles.
Ooh.
And I have four rose bushes in the rear, which is directly south, and one that is northwest of my house, rose bush. And in previous years, they have eaten the roses down to nothing but bare stem. And my idea this year is to harvest rose hips. So I'm reluctant to spray the rose bushes. Also, I have a topsy-turvy on my clothesline with a tomato plant, cherry tomato, where the Japanese beetles have attacked that, which I have never seen. And I'm wondering if that's because the underside of the leaves are exposed. That I went to Walmart and bought two Japanese beetle traps that are working quite effectively. In fact, I am unloading full bags probably every half hour throughout the day while they're out. And I have killed, you know, just hundreds upon hundreds, but they are still reaching my rose bushes. In fact, so Japanese beetle trap in the northwest near the one rose bush out front is collecting more Japanese beetles than the one in the rear where the four rose bushes and the tomato plant are. And I'm wondering, since I am hopefully going to have enough rose bushes left to harvest rose hips, what can I do to protect my roses now? And hopefully, you know, I understand that they leave larvae in the soil, and where would that larva be, and what could I use in the fall to kill the larva, or, you know, the next generations coming out?
Okay. In answer to, well, you say you're using the traps, the Japanese beetle traps. And of course, the way those things work is they have an attractant in them, a pheromone that attracts the Japanese beetle. And you know, that seemed like a really good idea, but the fact is that it is going to attract beetles there. So I sure wouldn't put those anywhere close to the plants I'm trying to protect, simply because you're going to be drawing Japanese beetles in that maybe would not have come otherwise, because it's not just drawing them out of your yard. I mean, this stuff, you know, wafts across the air currents and so on, and they're pretty darn sensitive, so you may be drawing more there than you would have had otherwise. So I'd put them away from.
I noticed that.
Yeah. I'd put them away from what I wanted to protect. That's, you know, people sometimes laughingly say, well, you ought to put those over in your neighbor's yard. But I don't know, that might not go over too well either. But do put them away from what you're trying to protect. Now, as far as protecting the roses, you know, or using something to kill the beetles on there, you said you're reluctant to spray them because of harvesting the rose hips. I don't think that you'd have a problem at all using a Liquid 7 insecticide and then still being able to harvest your rose hips.
Okay.
And Liquid 7, I mean, it certainly has efficacy against Japanese beetles. And the good thing is it breaks down in the sunlight really fast.
Okay.
So it's not going to linger around a long time. So okay. You'll probably have to make more than one application. But now it will certainly kill the Japanese beetles. And I do mean the liquid seven. I'm not talking about the dust, but the kind you're going to mix and spray. And
right.
And as far as killing grubs in the ground, you can go about it two ways. Of course, it's too late to do anything about now. But you can come along with, say, in the August, September time block with one of the granular grub products. For instance, I'm going to throw out a particular brand as an example. I mean, it's, you know, that brand is just a brand, and it's, I don't know that one's any better than the other, but it's the one I can think of right now. It's a Bayer 24-hour grub killer. You can apply that as the amount per unit of area, you know, per 100 square feet or per 1,000 square feet as listed on the label, and water that in. It will work good on killing those grubs while they're small. And you want to do it relatively early in the late summertime because you want those to be more shallow. You know, the deeper they go, the harder it is to get the insecticide down to them. But that's an example of one that should do a good job if you get it down where the grubs are, the Bayer 24-hour grub control. And again, August is not a bad time to do that.
Okay. I have one more question. Does the blossom rot apply to pumpkins as well?
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Any, the melons, cucumbers, squashes, peppers, those things, it can apply to them too.
Okay, so some Tums, and I have been watering, but they're in like a tractor tire container. So how about some Tums?
Anything's got calcium in it. I don't know how fast it's going to pick that up. If you were to crush it, maybe in mixing water and apply it. I don't know how much it's going to take, though. That's the thing, is I don't know how much calcium in a Tum. If you went and bought the calcium spray, the liquid, and the only reason I suggest that is because it'll tell you how much to mix, you know, and how to get enough in there. Otherwise, you're kind of guessing, I suppose. I mean, I don't know how many Tums to tell you that you ought to use on there. But, yes,
okay.
They do have calcium in them. Yes, they do.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go take those Japanese beetle traps down. I'm tired of emptying them anyway.
Well, I know, you know, at least move them far away, as far away from what you're trying to protect as possible, so you're not drawing them any closer to the plant, you know.
Right. I noticed that did happen, that I had more. And plus, I have an above-ground pool that attracts them as well.
Yeah, that's a good water source for them.
I catch them in the skimmer. So.
Yes, ma'am. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. If you're on the line, hold on, because you're coming up next. Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. We'll be right back.
But you've got your pride.
G. Gordon Liddy is on the Good Neighbor Network.
It's I, the G-Man.
G. Gordon Liddy, weekday mornings at 9 on WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Down home cooking right downtown in Murfreesboro at Jeff Sowell's Family Restaurant and Nana's Desserts on Hancock Street. Open daily from 11 to 6 and Sundays 11 to 5. Jeff's has 18 vegetables daily, 14 meats, including real hickory smoked barbecue.
Plus, all-you-can-eat catfish every Tuesday.
Jeff Sowell's Family Restaurant and Nana's Desserts at 467 Hancock Street,
where MTSU students and seniors get a 10% discount.
Heritage South Community Credit Union now has a new home, 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire.
This is Darlene Robinson, branch manager. I invite you to visit us soon and find out what your community's credit union is all about. We offer free debit cards and great checking, plus exceptional rates on loans and savings. You can join if you live, work, worship, or attend school in Rutherford, Bedford, or Marshall County.
Heritage South Community Credit Union, new offices at 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire. Federally insured by the NCUA.
We're visiting with Tina Fox at the Co-op Farm and Home Center on Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off South Church.
Come visit us for all those gardening needs. We have everything you need to take care of the insects or disease on your plants. We have a wonderful gift selection. We have a great clothing department, wonderful pet and bird department. And of course, as always, we have the great farm store. So come visit us at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard.
Right now, head over to the Co-op Farm and Home Center on Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off South Church. And while we're on that subject, if you're looking for one product to control all the insects in and around your home, lawn, or garden, Bonide has the answer. Bonide's 8 Insect Control controls most of the common home, lawn, and garden insects. 8 is effective against more than 100 insects that destroy trees, shrubs, lawns, flowers, vegetables, and fruit. Use 8 to eliminate ticks, fleas, ants, and other home-invading pests. It can even be used indoors on houseplants. 8 kills on contact and repels insects for up to 30 days. Where do you get 8? Well, you can get it right now at the Co-op Farm and Home Center, the Co-op on Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off South Church. You can also get Bonide's 8 at Martin's Home and Garden. Martin's is on Broad, right across from Demas Restaurant.
We'll have plenty of sunshine for the forecast area, 83 degrees for your high, with a calm wind becoming northeast, around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, clear skies, low of 58. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, 66.
People ask me, how does Perry Bell sell first quality name brand furniture about half price every day at Bell Furniture? He's learned that if you buy in trailer truckload quantities, you save money. And then instead of making the displays look like a decorator magazine, he puts it all in one big room. That saves money too. Plus, it's only Perry Bell and Linda Ferris there. The overhead is down. Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna.
You learn from those with different opinions. You're getting a street smart education from Good Neighbor Talk, WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Let's go back to the phones. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I was wanting to ask Mitchell about how to get rid of moles.
Okay. How do you do that, Mitchell?
How much time do we have left this morning, Bart?
It's a big, big thing.
Well, okay, I'll give you the short answer. I don't know. I get rid of moles. I said that now, and I'll back up and I'll try to answer the question for you. I don't know a sure way to get rid of a mole other than when you trap one.
Mm-hmm.
When you trap a mole and you remove the mole from the trap, then you know that you have control of that mole. Okay, now, and traps are very effective, and there's more than one kind of trap. There are the spear or the harpoon type traps, and there are also the they're a catch trap, kind of a grab trap, and they work. People catch moles with traps every day. Other folks, though, will buy the traps and use them, and they never catch the first mole. And I think a lot of it has to do with how diligent are you in figuring out where to put the trap. Moles make lots of runs or will make many feet of run per day. Folks that study this stuff have decided that it's not uncommon for a single mole to create 150 feet of run in a day's time. That's a single mole. But not all of that run area is going to be used on a regular basis. Some are not used but maybe once or twice, but others are used on an almost daily basis. And that's where you need to put the mole traps. And to determine which runs are the most active or the everyday runs, a person's got to do a little work. And they're going to need to go and flatten those runs down and watch for them to come back up again. You know, it's not uncommon to find moles out working in the middle of the afternoon, you know, like any time from noon on up until later in the afternoon. So you can go out in the morning, flatten one down, or flatten them all down, and come back and see which ones have popped back up, or, you know, do it that evening and come out the next day and see which ones have come back up. Do that for a couple of times, and if the same one keeps coming back up, well, there's an indicator that that's an active run. And then you want to go put that trap in that run and just follow the directions about how to set it. You know, if it tells you to do it away, then you want to try to do it that way, because they're going to try to build the thing and so on, so that you'll have the best chance of success. Another option, or to use in conjunction with trapping, is the use of the poisoned worms. Moles eat earthworms as well as grubworms, and there are products today that are made to mimic those. So they're like artificial worms and grubs. They make a lot of sense, and they apparently do have some effectiveness, at least according to just anecdotal reports from people just like you that have used them and said they thought they had benefits due to reduced mole activity. But to use those, you've got to put them down in the run, and you need to put them in an active run. So you've got to figure out where to put those. But really and truly, the combination of those two things, and plus, if you just get yourself a lawn roller to pull behind your lawnmower and continually flatten the runs out, the folks in Michigan have done some studies up there, and they're thinking that you can just aggravate them enough to maybe not run them off, but go a little bit deeper so that at least you don't see the runs on top of the ground as much. We're about out of time, I guess, so I'll stop. But, you know, really, that's we can talk about this for a lot. But I don't know that I have a real good answer for controlling moles.
Yeah, on that note, and good luck to you.
Yes,
on
sir,
that.
I wish you luck.
We've got a whole lineup of folks with questions, but unfortunately, we are out of time.
Well, you know what, though? We're open every day, Monday through Friday, at the Extension office. Yeah. You can call us there, 898-7710. You know, if there's not any, if one of the agents is not there available to take a to answer your call, we'll leave a message. We'll sure call you back.
898-7710.
Yes, sir.
Give Mitchell about a half hour, and he'll be back there, and you can.
Well, I won't hardly be back in half hour. I've got another stop or two to make,
oh,
but I'll
okay.
be back there. But there's somebody there all the time, or at least during office hours, not all the time.
Stay with us. Much more to come on WGNS. G. Gordon Liddy comes along next. And as you heard earlier, G. Gordon is retiring in July, so you don't want to miss any of his shows. And then tomorrow at this time, we're going to be talking about United Way with the CEO, Brian Hercules.
Like the first time, every time, I want to spend